accession number 18775, Real One.
Dan Prowse, Real One. Where were you born, please?
In Wallasey.
Which year was this?
1926.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Wallasey?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you when you left school?
About 14, 15.
Did you then get a job?
Yes, I went in the post office as a telegraph boy.
This is in Wallasey?
No, in Liverpool, actually. That was during the war.
So you spent the war years in the Wirral and in Liverpool?
That's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you as a youngster in Merseyside area in the war?
During the war? It was quite exciting, actually. It appeared to be quite exciting, but as for those who were bombed, I don't suppose it was. But I joined the ATC, Air Training Corps, and it was up to 1944, when I was conscripted. I went in the army in 1944.
Why did you find it so exciting?
I don't know, it's something different. I haven't a clue. No, it was just exciting, I think, the whole thing. We were pushed from pillar to post, and schools were changed around. We had to go to another school. And during the night, during the bombing, where I was on top of the air raid shelters watching the flag, the bombardment from the air, you know, and the anti-aircraft guns. And on Bidston Hill one night, I remember, it was lit up completely with incendiary bombs. It looked beautiful then.
What was lit up by incendiary
bombs? Bidston Hill. It's a hill. It's only just behind here. Bidston Hill, they call it. It has a observatory on the top and a windmill, and it was completely illuminated with these incendiary bombs. And it was quite exciting. But as I say, when the bombing really started, it got a bit hectic then.
What was your address during the war?
Lisa. I lived in Lisa during the war.
And the name of the street?
Rees Avenue East, Lisa. It was Rees Avenue then.
Did any bombs fall?
Yeah, there was one. One fell across the way. On the opposite side of the road. As it was, we were outside then when that happened.
Any other bombs you remember in the Lisa area?
Quite a few, but there wasn't a lot of damage done in Lisa, but on the outskirts it was, in Wallasey particularly, that got it really heavy. Actually, Wallasey itself, you know, the town centre.
What about your place of work? What was the address of that?
Well, that was, I was actually in three places across in Liverpool. I was in Victoria Street post office. That was the main post office, the head post office. And then I went as what they call indoor messenger in a telephone exchange. And one particular night, there was a heavy bombardment. I was in there. They called it Bank Telephone Exchange. And it was in the centre of the town. Now, this particular night, everything around it was completely obliterated. And Bank Telephone Exchange was still standing there. There's a photograph being taken, and you can see the whole of Liverpool absolutely, completely devastated all around. And Bank Telephone Exchange inside, on its own, standing on its own.
Where were you at the time?
I was in Bank Telephone Exchange.
How frightening was that for you?
I don't know. You got used to the bombing, you know. You got used to the noise and the... But it was really bad when you came outside, you know. The actual smell, the fumes and the, you know, the burning and one thing and another. But Liverpool, for years, you could go across there, and that smell pervaded the air, you know. It was a horrible smell, burning, and it was, the centre of the town was absolutely devastated.
You could still smell burning years afterwards?
You could. Well, I wouldn't say years. Well, during the war years, you could. When you went across there, you could smell that burning, you know. It seemed to linger. And, it was quite bad there. They had it really bad in Liverpool.
How did public morale stand up during the bombing?
People were very, very close, I think. They mugged it. The railway station, the James Street Station, Central Station, you know, the underground railway stations, at night, they were completely, absolutely cramped tight with people who had gone there. And I used to be coming home, say, about 10 o'clock at night there, and you had to make your way jumping over people to get onto the trains. And they used to take their beds down there, but they were used right through the war as air raid shelters. I said, the morale, as far as the morale goes, pretty good, I think it was. There was some talk about people, I never saw it in Liverpool, about people protesting against one thing or another, but I never saw anything of the sort. People, of course, you know, they were absolutely fed up with the war. But the morale was good, I think.
What were they supposed to be protesting about?
I think it was a lack of food and one thing and another. You know, they were very short of all sorts of things, and I think that's what they were mostly up in arms against. But I don't think there was anything against the war efforts at all. You know, people really got stuck in there.
Did you use the undergrounds yourself as shelter?
No. I was across there. We always used to finish about 10 o'clock if we were working late, you know, and we'd get back home. There were trains running, the underground, but they used to stop about 11 o'clock at night. But I used to get back home each night, unless I was working. Sometimes I had to remain there because of the bombing, like the case where I was stuck in Bank Exchange, but I used to get home most nights.
What was the attitude towards the Germans during the war?
They weren't exactly liked, but it was a case of, I think, a lot of propaganda issued by the government, and they sort of ridiculed Hitler and Goring and Goebbels. Hitler, they were more or less made items of ridicule, you know, so people used to have a laugh at them. But I don't think people resented the Germans themselves. I'm sure they did. Mind you, they were, the bombing raids were on Germany, like, they were welcomed, I think, by the people. But I think the arch enemy, you might call him, was Hitler, of course, and people made him the focal point, you know, of their, what you might call, hatred, I don't know, that's what.
Did you ever listen to Lord Haw Haw?
Oh, yes, yeah. He's very convincing, he was. Yeah, he used to come out and, what was it he used to say? I don't know how he used to open up this. Is a rice station frame or something or other. I don't know. But his opening centres used to be in Hamburg, some stations on the so and so line. But he was always the same. But he was very convincing. But he had his facts. He had a lot of facts which were proved true. Obviously, they had a good intelligence supply line. So.
And what about Churchill broadcasts?
Churchill was very convincing. Him, he was exceptionally so. He was definitely the one who kept the morale up of the people, I think. There were the extremists who were, of course, communists is one thing or another, who didn't like him, but the majority of the people, I mean, he was the man in the war, I think, definitely. I mean, no matter what party he belonged to, I mean, he was Tory, of course, but all people really looked up to him, and they really appreciated him. And his speeches were fantastic. They were. I mean, he was a great orator. You know?
Do you remember any celebrations at the end of the war?
I was in the army then, actually, and I can recall seeing them on films, you know, at the cinema and one thing and another, but I wasn't in any myself because I was in the forces at the time. Yeah.
How did you come to be in the army?
I was conscripted.
In 44?
44, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about being conscripted?
Oh, I actually volunteered. I was in the 80C, the Air Training Corps, and I expected to go into the Fleet Air Arm or the ATC or the Air Force. And I applied to go into the Fleet Air Arm. I was accepted. I got a number. And then a couple of months later, I got a reply saying that they were, I got a letter saying that they were full above their quota, surplus to requirements. So I was channeled into the Air Force and I went for an interview at Padgate, it was, and I passed for aircrew and I put on. On the waiting list, of course, you know, there until I was due to be called up. And then I got another letter from the Air Force saying they were surplus to requirements, so I finished up in the Army, in the South Lancashire Regiment.
And where did you do the basic training?
I started off at Richmond in Yorkshire, and then I was sent to a... Previous to my going into the Army, I'd been in hospitals quite a long time with I had nephritis, kidney disease, and I was in a bad way. I was really bad, and that of course it affected my health. I got in the army, and they sent me to what they call the physical training centre at Skegness, and that's where all we did all day for 6-8 weeks was physical training, arms drill, and we got extra rations there. And for 6 weeks. Like 6 or 8 weeks, 8 weeks, I think it was. That's all we did. And I came out and I was as fit as a fiddle. From 6 o'clock in the morning to late at night, that's all we did, was physical training and arms drill and whatnot. And it was really great. I enjoyed that. And then I'd been accepted as a potential officer. And I was sent up to... training battalion up in Inverness. I was there for 8 weeks, I think. I went through Wasby. And I was given a 3-month, I was told to go back in 3 months. But in the meantime, I'd volunteered to go into a battalion. So I finished up in the South Lancashire Regiment. And I stayed with them until 1948, I think it was.
What was it like in the South Lancashire?
Oh, it was great. I loved it. I was in Egypt and Palestine, called Palestine at the time. And I enjoyed it. I loved the sun and we were swimming and one thing and another. And
did you see any active service in Palestine?
In Palestine, oh yes, yeah. I think it was really bad then. It was 1948, and it was really bad there with the Stern gang and the what was the other gang?
Jurgensweiland.
That's right, yes, the Jurgen, yeah. But it was bad. I was right in the centre. I was actually about 200 yards, 300 yards away from St George's Hotel when that got blown up. That was the GHQ. St. David's Hotel, was it? St. David's Hotel.
King David Hotel.
Yeah, that's right, King David. I knew it was one the other, St. George's Hotel. King David Hotel, when that got blown up. We were on the OP site up on the building there, a large building. And that was the GHQ there. And,
what exactly happened on that occasion? What do you remember about it?
Not a lot. There was a lot of panicking and so on. I was on this OP and we were right at the top of this building. We had the sites and we had to be surveying all around. Then it got blown up. We reported it, of course, and we had to remain there as it was. You know, we couldn't move. But it was a real blast, that it was. But then we had our as I say, we were in, we moved around a lot. We were at Haifa, and we were at Jerusalem, and down in Nathaniel, was it, I think. But the compound where we were in civilian houses and surrounded by barbed wire and one thing and another, and people had to have passes come in, you know, the locals had to have passes come in there. Was a nice, well, not during the day. They used to come up and lob grenades over the barbed wire. And it was a beautiful place, Palestine. I loved it there. Even when the, we used to go down swimming a lot there as well.
Where did they lob the grenades over the wire?
Well, they had the compound, you know, secured with barbed wire, and outside that compound, you know, the people could walk. You see, we were right in the city centre, you see. And they used to come up in the car, motorbikes and so on, just lob the grenades over the barbed wire and then shoot off.
Which town was this?
That was in Jerusalem, but it happened in Haifa as well. We're on Mount Carmel. We're up on Mount Carmel. But we used to go out on patrols with had to visit houses just outside the perimeter, and you never knew from one minute to another what was going to happen. And then we're down in the port of Haifa, down the bottom. We had these boats coming in with all the illegal immigrants, and we were down there one time sorting them out, and it was tragic, you know, seeing some of the sights there.
Did you have to do in regard to the illegal immigrants?
Well, we had to sort them out. We had to, we searched them, and then we shoved them into livable cages, you know, compounds, until they decided what to do with them, and they were transshipped. But most of them went into, I think there were camps down there. But quite a few came through.
What were you supposed to be searching them for?
Well, no, arms or anything, identification or anything at all, you know. I mean, you couldn't see what was coming through, like the kids there. Whole families coming through on their own, but here you had certain for arms for the primary to see as well.
Did you find any arms?
I didn't myself, no. We found a lot of lots of propaganda on them, you know, leaflets and one thing and another, but you expected that.
Was that taken off them?
Oh, yes.
And what was their attitude towards being searched?
They hated it. they were very, very.
Did they make that apparent?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. They were very sullen. Very sullen. And yes, I've been in houses in Jerusalem, you know. And people were very nice. They were strange, you know. I found the Jews are very nice to speak to, very nice. And yet, I suppose these immigrants coming from Europe, they've been through such a lot. I suppose they just couldn't get less.
Were you searching houses and houses?
Oh, we had to go. Yes, and from time to time we would go into houses and search them. If there was any activity in the area, you know, such as bombs or any firing shots or whatnot, you would cordon off an area and you go through and search it. It is, I suppose, it was similar to what the Irish do. You know, that it was quite exciting.
What did you find in the house searches?
In one particular house, we did find arms, and then they arrested the householder there and took him away. But there were only sidearms, you know, revolvers and so on and such and so forth. But they were very clever. They had, as I said, they had their intelligence, and they knew exactly what was going on. They knew when a patrol was going around and so on and so forth. But
So whereabouts in the house were the sidearms?
I can't remember.
Was this in Haifa?
It was in Haifa, yes, up on top of Mount Carmel. But I don't know where we recovered them from, but I can't remember exactly where they came from.
Did you have any problems with the Arab population?
Apart from them pinching things, like they were very, they used to be called Clifty Wallers, you know, they were very, very good trust of one of them. But we didn't have any trouble at all with them, I don't think. We use those inside the compounds, you know, for work and one thing, another labourers, and we didn't have any problems with them at all.
What type of things did the Clifty Wallers want to take?
Anything that was around, anything at all. And they'd pinch anything, they would. But it's a well-known fact, you know, that.
Any other incidents that happened to you in Palestine?
I didn't know such a lot happened. Apart from the fact that we were up at Mount Carmel, rather amusing. We were up at Mount Carmel at the time, and at the time I was about, how old would I be? 18, 19, I think. And I was in the intelligence section at the time, and the officers' mess was just down the way, and they had a dinner one night. They invited all the local local dignitaries, you know, the chief of police, one thing another, and they used our office as a cloakroom. And I was in the office, and one of the batmen came up from the officers' mess. He said, "Oh, okay," he said, "could you fetch the chief of police?" I think it was his coat and his cane and his cap down, you know, to the mess. So I went down there, and as I say, I didn't drink at the time. And one of the officers grabbed me, and he said, "Proud," he said, "would you like a drink?" I said, "No, thank you." "Oh, go on, have a drink." I said, "All right, just a small one." And I recall he said, chap behind the bar, he said, "Give him a drink, will you?" And he must have tipped him a wink. The chap went around all the drinks. He said, "Have that." And I said, "Oh, that's nice." I finished up flat on my back. It put everything in. It's imaginable, I think. But I hadn't touched a drop, you know. And I finished up on my back with that drink.
As you went about in Palestine, did you feel unsafe and nervous?
Not really, I don't think. No. At that age, you don't. I mean, it's just a big adventure, I think. I don't think at any time I felt unsafe, no.
Which battalion of South Lancashire?
First Battalion.
And do you remember the company?
HQ company I was in. In the intelligence section.
What was your job with the intelligence section?
Oh, there it was issuing passes and one thing and another, going through stuff which had been seized and maps, dishing out maps, interrogating anybody brought in, and, generally security.
Were you doing interrogation?
Oh, yes, yeah. With an officer, of course, in the there would be an officer, there would be one of the intelligence section, you know, on it.
In the English language?
Oh, yes, yeah. Most of the what's names, most of the Jews that spoke English, the majority spoke English. But if not, we had an interpreter, actually. The one we had was, I think he was a Turk. We had a Turk and we had an Arab there. And he could speak both Hebrew and Arabic and English. And we had them as interpreters if we needed them.
How were the interrogations conducted?
I don't know how. They were just questioned. It wasn't anything forceful at all. You know, it wasn't forceful at all. It was just the interrogator just asking what they'd been doing, what this and that and one thing. And but there was nothing here. It wasn't a forceful interrogation, I don't think.
But what questions would you ask them?
Oh, God. Where they came from originally, what their job was, where they'd been, where they were living, did they know any British soldiers at all, and I don't know actually, you know, there was so many you could ask, you know, but I can't say that.
Why did you want to know whether they knew any British soldiers?
Well, there have been quite a lot of stores going missing, you know, and lots of these Arabs, as I said, they used to take anything, and I know for a fact that some of the squaddies were getting rid of stores on their side, you know, and that was one of the reasons I asked that question, you know, more or less pilfering, and it was a known thing, you know, that.
Were any of the soldiers selling arms?
No, definitely. No, I don't think any of them would do that. No, just generally stores, you know, clothing and one thing and another, bedding especially, you know, blankets and so on and so forth. But that's happened throughout the army all the time I was there, you know.
Did you get the impression that the people you were interrogating were telling you the truth or not?
No, I don't think so.
So what could you do to get at the truth?
Very little. Very little. No, there was nothing. If they were lying to you, you couldn't prove that they were lying, you know. There's very little you could do.
What type of lies might they tell you?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, they might have been lying continually, and everything they said might have been a lie, but I don't know. They were very crafty, especially the Arabs. They'd look you in the eye, like, and they'd make it, definitely. But, I don't know.
So did they put on a show of sincerity?
Oh, definitely. Oh, no, they're very sincere. Oh, I wouldn't do that. No, definitely, no. No, not me. But you knew very well then. Whatever it was, they'd been responsible for it, you knew very well, but there's very little you do, unless you caught them red-handed doing something, you know.
So were these suspects over thefts or over terrorism?
Well, thefts, generally. Terrorists. If you caught a terrorist, he was sent right back to the brigade or div, I think. He was sent right back. He wasn't interrogated by the battalion. He'd be sent right back to a div or a brigade or div to be interrogated by the intelligence officer.
So you were just interested in
security, mainly, you know, in within the barracks and within the battalion, and